Hi, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined tonight by someone who is always a bridesmaid and one time a bride. You were
one time
my bride. You married me. We got married. We're married. It's
this
Erica.
Is true. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. You always make me laugh and giggle on these, and then when I hear myself giggling, I think, "Oh, so silly! I should be serious."
Yeah, please be serious.
Serious this movie is a very, podcast, but you always make me laugh.
It's a serious discussion about movies. That's implied in the title when we say "F this movie."
Yeah.
There's no kidding around going on. We're going to talk about Bridesmaids tonight.
Yes, we are. But I might get distracted during this podcast.
I
want to warn you.
Yes,
as
please
well
warn
as
me.
The listeners, I apologize in advance because the Bulls game is on in the background and
round one of the Eastern Finals.
And I'm having a hard time keeping my eyes away from it.
Right. The Bulls are playing what appears to be the Looney Tunes. I'm sorry.
No.
You have Space Jam on. This is not the Bulls game. This is Space
Jam.
I want to be
like Mike.
Is that from Space Jam?
No. No.
I believe I can fly.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, the real Bulls game is on, and they're playing
Heat
with your boy Dwayne Wade, and we're winning right now.
Yes.
So if at any point we start going, yay,
like
it's because
that.
Space Jam is over and we don't have to watch it anymore.
D. Rose.
Yeah, so we're talking about
my
Bridesmaids, which is...
Speaking of Bridesmaids, I have a crush on that, too.
Continuing our trend of talking about new releases, which we've been doing a lot lately, but it's the summer, and so it's fun to talk about these new movies that come out every weekend. We're going to talk about Bridesmaids, but because it's a new movie, as is our way on F This Movie, we're going to try and avoid spoiling it until maybe the last 15 minutes or so of the show, at which point we'll give lots of indicators that we're about to go into spoilers. So please listen until then and decide whether or not you want to see Bridesmaids, and then if you haven't heard it, shut it off for the last 15 minutes.
Don't
or if you haven't seen it, rather.
Right.
Thank you. I'm so glad you're here.
Don't ruin it. Oh,
to keep me on course.
Exactly.
To correct me the way that the wives do to the husbands on the TV.
According to the TV, the wives are always nagging the husbands.
Just,
and the husbands just
the
can't
remote.
Get anything right.
I want the remote. I want a barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
And check out the neighbor.
And like you don't know how to read a list and go
no,
shopping
I do
and
it
buy
all
the things
wrong.
That she needs.
Right. You come home and our son is covered in paint.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of that.
There's always a lot of that, right?
Always a lot of that.
But it's us on the podcast.
That's right. That's
married.
Right.
Married.
So much love. Hey, if somebody wanted to email F This Movie, where would they email?
F This Movie at blogspot.com.
I love you very
much.
Wait,
no, I messed that up.
F This Movie Podcast.
F This Movie Podcast.
At gmail.com.
Please cut that out. Please
I'm not
going to
cut anything
out. I got
out.
It right last
I'm
time,
not.
Remember? Remember?
I don't.
When I was on the podcast for the F These Romantic Comedies podcast.
I remember that. I remember that, but not the part. I think you got a lot of things right.
Mm-hmm. No, I got that right.
Mostly
so,
marrying
F this,
me. Just kidding. Biggest
top,
mistake of your life.
Up top. Okay. F This Movie Podcast at gmail.com.
Correct. And what
for
if they
all
want
of
to find
the
us
electronic
like on,
mail.
Yes. And if they want to find us on Facebook.
F This Movie Blogspot. No, wait. F This Movie dot blogspot.
This is my favorite new segment on the show.
How many times
where
can Erica
I quiz you
up?
About where our stuff is located? By the way, nobody knows this stuff but me.
Our
there's
stuff
too much
is
to keep track of.
In our house.
Good
is
point.
That what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
We're
and
married.
Where is our house? Don't tell people where
know,
we live.
I know.
Anyway,
there are a lot of strangers listening. Mostly strangers, right?
Our website is fthismovie.blogspot.com. Our email again. fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can become a fan of us or a friend of us on Facebook. You know all about the Facebook, my love.
Oh, yeah. I'm
you
all
love
over.
The Facebook. Facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter.com/fthismovie.
Tweet, tweet.
Very good.
Tweet, tweet.
You sound just like the Twitter.
When I send a Twitter, is that what it's called?
That's
well,
it's
I,
called
when
a Twitter.
When I send a Twitter,
yeah.
I hear that noise.
When you're all a Twitter.
Tweet, tweet.
Before we talk about Bridesmaids,
yeah.
My love,
mm-hmm.
Have you seen anything lately?
I have.
We see a lot of the same stuff.
We do.
But not all the same stuff.
Because we're married. No, also
point.
Because we both like movies.
That's right.
Someone recently thought that we owned a lot of movies
That's correct. We do own a lot of movies.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, there's more. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah, he was.
I interrupted. I'm always doing that.
Well, it's kind of like this is
like
another
that
I know
show, according to Patrick.
Well, and my story falls in line with that because this person that we know, who's a very nice person,
yes,
suggested that. Oh, you're so lucky. Your wife let you buy these movies.
I know, and I was like, I know it, dude.
And I said, well.
And I'm like, well,
turns out I like movies, too.
I let her shop.
Right.
And eat chocolate.
Yeah.
She loves it.
Yeah, and just, you know, like flowers and cooking, cleaning.
Yes.
I like those things just fine. It just, you know.
You're like, when other people
I'm
do
glad
them,
we're talking about this.
What you're saying.
Because I do. I love it when you cook and I eat it. But this is good because this has to do with.
This will tie into Bridesmaids.
This will tie into Bridesmaids. Okay. This will tie into.
You're getting ahead of
I am.
You're getting ahead of
I
ourselves.
I am, but you know what I was thinking? I've been on this podcast only twice before.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
You're always on it in my heart.
Oh.
When I'm talking.
Do you think that comes through the screen and the
I do,
the
and
waves?
I'll tell you why.
What are the
waves? A lot of the things I say
waves?
Sound like things a chick would say.
Digiwaves?
Digiwaves.
This podcast is coming to you through the Digiwaves. But I've been
and
on
we'll
this podcast.
About, yeah,
I've been
times,
on this
yeah.
podcast twice before.
Yeah.
And
the first
time
was to talk about Sex and the City 2.
Right. And the second time was to...
Romantic comedy. So
right.
I just bring you on for like the chick stuff.
I know.
Yeah.
And I think every time I'm making this point that
right.
I don't like when people are so narrowly viewed, especially based on their gender.
Right.
But here I am again with a chick
talking
movie.
Talking about the girl movie. I'm just like, I need vagina
oh
on this
God.
Podcast. And Doug is busy.
And you know
so
what?
I call you.
And I'll give it to
you.
You. I will give it
house.
To you.
Thank you so much. I love you. What have you seen lately? Answer the question.
Okay, I've
Stop
seen
beating around
A Fistful of Dollars.
The Bush. Yes, you did for the first time.
Yes.
How did that go? That was inspired by watching the two-part Community finale.
Yes.
And it was a whole spaghetti western
and
homage.
I want to watch some westerns.
That's right. And
right.
I was like, Texas Rangers. And you're like,
and
I've
I also
seen it.
Love
I saw it in the theater.
True Grit. And I've also loved a lot of, yeah.
But you saw Unforgiven for the first time recently.
Yeah.
And you dug that.
Right. So it was a little western.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fistful of Dollars.
Yes.
So there are many reaction shots in that movie. It's mostly just gunshots and then five different people reacting. And you see close-ups of their... dirty faces, like sweaty, tan, a little bit dirty, like gunpowder all
You're
over everyone all the
every
time.
Every Sergio Leone movie ever made.
Okay. Okay. Lots of reaction shots. And then at one point, I like fell asleep for 5 minutes because I was so comfy and cozy.
Sure.
And I woke up and I thought the movie had started over again because they were in the same spot with the kid running out and the woman embracing the child. And people crying and gunshots and the men standing in all the same places.
It repeats
and
itself a little bit.
It wasn't the beginning
a
of the movie again. So
bit.
Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, so we saw that.
Yeah.
And I saw today we watched a movie called
Last Night.
Last Night.
Not the Don McKellar movie from the late 90s about the end of the world.
No. I did see that though.
Yeah. This is a new movie with Keira Knightley and Sam Worthington, written and directed by Massey Tejedin.
I don't know how to say
it. I apologize
name.
If I said that wrong.
Right.
And it was made in 2009 and is just now receiving very limited release, but it's also available through On Demand, which is
right.
how we watched it.
Right.
And it's just sort of this four-person character study. Sam Worthington and Keira Knightley play a married couple who have some issues. One night they're at a party and he's kind of flirting with Eva Mendes and she gets upset. And then the next night he goes away on business. She reunites sort of by coincidence with an ex-boyfriend.
Right.
And it's just sort of this exploration about do they or don't they
right.
Cheat on one another.
Right.
What were your feelings about Last Night?
Well, I like movies with people talking.
Sure.
I love dramas where people talk about relationships. So even though I liked the movie.
Did you ever see Raising Helen? Because that they talk about relationships. I'm thinking Georgia Rule. Have you ever seen Georgia Rule? You would love Georgia Rule.
I have not seen Georgia Rule.
You have a vagina.
Oh, okay.
You would love Georgia Rule.
So I'd also
three generations of women talking about their vaginas.
What about Yaya Sisterhood?
Yes,
traveling
you did see Yaya Sisterhood and the traveling
of Yaya's.
Yaya Sisterhood pants.
Those are two different movies.
So you like movies where they talk about relationships?
I do, And so I liked the movie. I never have to watch it again.
Right.
I thought it looked good.
Yeah, the photography was really good.
Yeah, I thought it looked really good.
I agree with that.
Their performances were...
Well, Sam Worthington, who of course is the star of my favorite movie of all time.
Yes.
Terminator Salvation, of course, is what we're referring to.
I hope Mike is laughing.
I have to assume he is. yeah, I was not crazy about the movie at all.
Yeah, no, you were not.
No, I felt like it introduced four people. It was very shallow and superficial and asks questions that it has no interest in answering. Mm-hmm. And it's not attempting to sort of explore the psychology of why these characters would do the things that they do.
Right, right.
It's just sort of like a soap opera.
It's just camera on and there it goes and there's nothing really more. And so I never need to watch it again, but I thoroughly enjoyed watching it today, and you did not.
No, but don't you feel like, I mean, okay, so we watched a movie a couple months ago called The Freebie.
Oh, yeah.
Directed by Katie Asselton, and it stars her and Dax Shepard, of all people, and it's sort of a similar movie. It's about a couple who decides, actually, that for one night they can go have sex with someone else. And that movie, I thought, was good and interesting and asked questions and inspired a conversation that... that last night did not at all.
Right, right.
So in my opinion, The Freebie is the movie you should watch instead of last night.
Right, yeah.
But I would never... But you still
Yeah, I enjoyed watching it. Again, I really liked how it looked. And for some reason, when a film is shot in a city with that great photography, I don't know, I'm drawn to it. But I will say this. The description of the movie said it was sexy and provocative. I did not think it was sexy.
Or sexified?
Right, or provocative.
It was super sexy. Come on. No. Eva Mendes gets into the pool wearing a slip.
Oh my goodness.
That's right. Eva Mendes in a slip. Woo! It's sexy in 1955. and then last week we watched All Good Things.
Right.
With Ryan Gosling and Kirsten Dunst, which is the narrative debut of Andrew Jarecki, who made Capturing the Freedmans.
Right.
Continuing in a long trend of documentary filmmakers who make bad fictional films.
Oh, no.
Michael Moore made Canadian Bacon, and Errol Morris made something terrible, and Joe Berlinger made Blair Witch Book of Shadows.
Right. Well, now the Catfish guys...
Yes.
Are going to make...
Paranormal Activity 3.
Right.
Awesome.
So that will be their foray.
That's right. What's her name? Actually, didn't do so bad. Who made American Teen. Nanette Burstein.
Oh, yeah.
She made Going the Distance.
Oh, which
we thought was okay,
I liked
right?
That. Yeah. Definitely.
What are your thoughts on All Good Things?
I think I liked that more than you did as well.
Do you see a trend coming? Do you see a trend developing here?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Is that going to happen today with Bridesmaids, too?
I have no idea, actually.
I don't think so.
You liked All Good Things. Do you want to talk about it a little bit?
Yeah. Ryan Gosling played a man whose name I cannot remember.
Yes.
But it was based on a true story.
His name was Stephen Notebook.
Stephen the Murderer Notebook?
That's right. Spoilers.
Gosling played a man who was accused of murdering his wife. I think,
suspected. Was he accused? Well, yeah, I guess he was accused, right? There was sort of like a trial.
Kind of. Well, because then another woman went missing and it was all tied together.
It's all sort of based on real events.
Yes, this
and
woman
if we were
went
better
missing.
Prepared, we
right.
would say this is the case that it's based on, but we're not at all.
No, I didn't really know the case. I mean, there's been quite a few cases like that where, woman goes missing.
Right.
She's married.
I promise
maybe
not to murder
husband.
You, by the way, as long as we're talking about this.
That is great news, right?
It's on the podcast, and these things last forever.
Oh,
so,
and everyone's listening.
Exactly. So people know.
You can't lie in front
you're
of
safe,
everyone.
You're safe with me, is what
Thanks,
I'm saying.
Thanks, babe. Thanks.
No problem.
Yeah, but I liked it. I thought Kirsten Dunst played his wife, and I really loved the beginning of the movie, but of course that's me.
You love when they're falling in love, not realizing it's going to lead to murder and
there's
misery.
Me loving something that's girly, falling in love, right? Because guys can't
I loved
like
the murder,
right? Guys can't love. Apparently, this is the thing with chick flicks, and I hate that term, and I really wish we would stop using it. I do. It's insulting because it implies that I have to like it just because I'm a girl, or that a boy. Couldn't like it, or if he does, then there's something else being implied about him.
Do you think we should start
him.
Calling guy movies dick flicks?
Sure.
How come that hasn't caught on yet?
You know what? You just
I made that up right now?
Yep, and I think we're going to go to www.blogspot.com/dickflix, or wait, dickflix@podcast.gmail.com.
That's two things tonight that are recorded for all of time.
Yeah, one, dickflix is yours.
Invented by me. Two, you're not going to be murdered by me.
Is that a website too? A blog spot?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Can you write a blog about...
I have a whole blog about all the people I'm not going to murder.
Okay, cool.
There's actually only about 6 people on it. Everybody else, you're fair game.
But it implies that, like, so if a guy likes a movie that has been deemed a chick flick by someone who doesn't have anything better to say, does that mean that the man doesn't enjoy romance or love or even sex or women? Because then isn't, so a guy who can't tolerate a movie that features women or features a love story, isn't that worse? Isn't that bad?
I think as a guy, you're supposed to like all that stuff, but you're not love or romance, you're not, just sex and women.
Gross.
But you're not supposed to like want to talk about it or hear other people talk about it. Okay. Like, A, you don't want to hear your wife talk about it, as the sitcoms have taught us.
Right. It makes you so nervous and uncomfortable.
Yeah, and just like you're bored by it. You just want to watch the game.
Right, right.
Or play cards with your buddies.
So what does it say about us right now that I am... mostly watching the Bulls game right now.
And I'm talking about Bridesmaids.
I love you too.
So All Good Things, we should move on to Bridesmaids. But okay, I did not really like All Good Things either, because I felt like it starts okay, and then about the halfway point it turns into a totally different movie
that it hasn't earned.
It goes all over the place and starts making these leaps, and Ryan Gosling is all of a sudden dressing as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fine, that's a weird development that I didn't see coming, but the movie doesn't pay any attention to it. It's just like, no, this is just something that happens.
Right. Like, it happened in the real story, so we're throwing it in, but we don't develop actually.
The first movie is just this story of a, like, almost like a Blue Valentine, like a relationship gone bad, and then the second movie turns into this bizarre procedural.
Right.
And
then
I
felt like the director didn't know how to tell the rest of the story, or just didn't know what to do, so then there's all this voiceover narration
from text,
his character.
Right?
But in the beginning there's not as much of that, but then it seemed like the last half an hour or so
it was
just all
narration
of what was happening in the court and what was happening with him in whatever state he moved to, and I think it was Texas.
Not a horrible movie, but not one I would recommend at all.
Right, again,
unless
I'm
you
glad,
want to see Kirsten Dunst topless.
I guess I'm
Dunst
glad
topless,
I saw it,
that
but I'll never
happen.
Need to watch it again. Kirsten Dunst topless, yes.
And you can't wait for Melancholia. Or perhaps you don't want to mix your Kirsten Dunst toplessness with your Lars von Trier End of the World movies, which I could understand.
Right.
Those two things, maybe not two tastes that go
great
together.
There's someone out there, though, who probably...
That's the only way. Yeah,
right,
that's
the only
way
they wants
to
see that, right.
Topless. Yeah, and it's like, I can't believe the world didn't end.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry to interrupt, but something really great just happened on the Bulls game.
Yeah, I believe it.
Oh, my gosh.
We're way up right now. It looks like we're going to win against those cursed cartoon characters.
Someone took a shot from far away.
Yeah.
And he didn't make it, but I think D. Rose, I think it was D. Rose, I was only kind of half watching, but D. Rose was right under the basket, and it bounced, and he took it, and he just dunked it. Oh, so great. Okay, right. Back to the movies.
Yeah, you're ruining this podcast.
My real favorite thing.
Let's talk about Bridesmaids.
Okay.
So Bridesmaids came out this weekend. Kristen Wiig co-wrote and stars, and I'm not the world's biggest Kristen Wiig fan. Judd Apatow produces. Paul... Feig?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't know how to say
But he's the Freaks and Geeks guy, right?
Yeah, he directed it.
I love Freaks and Geeks.
And makes a little cameo in the movie.
Did he direct Undeclared too, or no?
He might have directed episodes, but he didn't,
create it. Okay.
He makes a little cameo near the end of the film, but again, I suspect he had lines that were cut out of the movie, like a lot of people in the movie, but we'll get to that. So now, the reason why you're so perfect to talk about Bridesmaids...
Yes.
Is because
wait, go back. I'm so perfect?
The reason you're so perfect.
Yeah, tell me. Tell the listeners.
I don't know.
Let's make this really schmoopy.
Yeah, all right. You're very pretty.
Oh.
You're the prettiest girl that ever married me.
Oh.
You're funny. You like movies.
I do love movies.
You watch basketball games.
I think
when I'm
the only
to talk
reason
to you on computer recordings.
True, because we just won.
Yeah. Go Bulls.
Oh my gosh. I think that when you met me, the only reason you liked me was because I worked at Blockbuster.
That's exactly right. You could hook me up with all
Blockbuster,
the great
by the way,
movies.
Listeners, was
like,
my
hey,
dream
you
job
should
as
rent
a child.
8 days a week. And you're like, you should rent Southie. And you're like, you should rent Fall, directed by Eric Schaefer.
I found like, diamonds in the rough that were actually
Dangerous
not diamonds.
Dangerous Beauty. And you made me watch Dangerous
Beauty.
That
was not Beauty. A bad movie.
It's not a good movie. So you're standing up in two weddings this year.
I am.
You are
yes.
a bridesmaid.
I am.
Did this movie...
I stood up in one last year, too.
Did this movie... So did you. Get it all right? Did this movie get everything right? It's like to be a bridesmaid?
No.
No?
No.
Elaborate. I'm going to sleep.
I have not... Okay, shh. None of the bridal parties I was involved with featured food poisoning.
Don't give too much away.
I know.
Now. See, careful.
I'm not good at this. I will give something away. I'm worried.
Well, I can always go back and cut stuff out.
But let's jump to the chase here.
Okay.
There were elements of bridesmaids
that were jumping to the chase.
Can you erase that I said that? I did not say that.
One of your cute things
is
messing up common colloquialisms. By the way, she never does that. I'm just kidding.
But I thought it
would be funny to make it a thing that you do. All right, go ahead.
This podcast is ruined.
Let's jump to the chase. Go ahead.
Okay, let's get to the point here. Bridesmaids got a lot of things right, I think, about what it feels like to be in a group of women where not everybody knows each other very well or is friends. But as many Hollywood movies do, it took certain elements too far, you know, to where it's good for maybe comedy or for a wider audience, but it's certainly not realistic in terms of what I've been involved in with my friends and family. So that's what you asked, right? If it portrayed everything, the thing is,
apparently, if you read the reviews of Bridesmaids or you've been reading any of the articles, I can't appreciate the movie. Or maybe I can because...
Right. Finally, women.
Right. Women get to be funny, too. It's like The Hangover, but for women. Right. And like, I feel like as soon as you start talking about it only in those terms, you're just perpetuating the problem.
Right.
Instead of just saying, this is a funny movie.
Right.
You have to make the point of saying it's a funny movie with women in it. And now it's like, okay, great. So we get one a year because you guys can't stop pointing out the fact that, see, women can be funny. Like, oh, great job. And Bridesmaids is a really funny movie.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. I have issues with it. And some of my issues are that, like, I like certain things so much that I felt like they got shortchanged.
Right.
The movie's over 2 hours long, which is way too long for a comedy, I think. But at the same time, I wanted more.
I was going to say, I agree with that. It's too long for a comedy. At the same time, I could have watched a 4-hour movie based on
certain aspects.
Right. Certain plot points and
characters.
Yes.
Because the thing about Bridesmaids is,
and I wanted more of certain scenes, who
just doesn't understand this movie. You do. It's about sisterhood and being girlfriends.
Do you have a uterus?
I don't anymore.
Right.
Because of my hysterectomy.
Okay, so then you don't get it.
That's right. So the thing about Bridesmaids is, it's like 3 or 4 different movies going on at once, and I like some of them way more than others.
Right.
There's sort of like an interesting character-based comedy that's about dialogue and real people.
That's always my favorite thing.
Right.
That
was all the stuff I liked. And the movie almost opens with, I mean, it's super schizophrenic because it opens with a scene of Kristen Wiig and John Hamm that's way broad and over the top, right? And here we go.
Can we talk about John Hamm? At some point, we are going to talk about John Hamm.
Of course.
Okay.
It opens with a scene of them. It's super broad and, like, gets the audience laughing, but it doesn't resemble reality at all.
Right.
And then the very next scene is Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph, and they have this great scene where they just talk to each other like real people, and they're believable friends. Mm-hmm. And I loved that scene, and I was like, oh, I hope the movie goes in this direction.
Absolutely.
And that happens over and over again, where you get a scene between Kristen Wiig, and I want to say his name is Chris O'Dowd, who plays the Irish cop that she becomes friends with. Chris O'Dowd, who was on, I apologize if I get this wrong, the IT Crowd or the It Crowd. I don't know how you say it if you're a fan of cool cult British comedy.
I've heard of that show, but I don't know much about it.
We watched a couple episodes.
It's available
on Netflix since then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's watch more, because I really liked him.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah.
But he's very different on that show.
Oh, okay.
He's like a big slob on that show.
Oh, okay.
And he's very charming in this movie. He's one of
so
the best things
charming.
About the movie. Yeah.
He's really well played, and it's
their scenes
pretty
are great.
Realistic, too.
Right. Their scenes are great. I wanted more of that. But then, butting up against that is this crazy, over-the-top, like, broad slapstick movie. There's a scene that's in a lot of the trailers. I hope it's not too much of a spoiler where they go to a dress fitting and they get sick. I won't say too much, but I guess, like, Judd Apatow has pretty much said, or somebody has said in print, that scene was not in the original script, that was added at the insistence of Judd Apatow because he thought that would help bring in the male audiences.
Really?
Because we like to see people throw up and poo. We don't like women talking to each other.
Right.
Even if it's funny, that's not interesting unless they're pooing. Listen, if they could talk and poo the whole movie, I'll see this movie over and over again.
Do you remember that one year where there were Poo Talk.
Yeah.
Poo Talk at blogspot.com. Poo Talk podcast at gmail.com. Do you remember that one year where there were three or four movies that came out where a character pooed
at some
loudly
point, yeah.
and grossly?
It was like a
I want to say it was like an
span.
American Pie movie, maybe?
Yes, and that happened in the first American Pie.
Maybe Wedding Crashers? No.
Yeah. Bradley
and then
Cooper
that movie with
Crashers.
That blonde girl.
Monica Potter.
Thank
Head
you.
Over Heels.
Yep,
that was
head over
the one
heels.
Where it was sort of
Yikes.
The most out of place because that's wow. just, as you would say, a chick flick. I'm kidding. You would not say that. But like that was a movie
right.
supposedly targeted
Other people
towards
would say
women.
That.
Right.
Yeah.
And then in the middle of it is just this incongruous pooing scene.
Right. Do you remember when in the movie Psycho, directed by Alfred Hitchcock, a toilet is flushed?
Yes.
And that was... considered.
That was as far as we could go. We're like,
it
oh
was
my
like,
gosh,
that's
I can't believe
right.
They're well,
showing
Hitchcock
a toilet
knew
flush.
That in 40 or 50 years,
we'd
most
be showing
movies
just
would center around
out,
just
like,
people
pooing.
Pooing
all the time, loudly, grossly.
Yeah. Even in trailers now, there's that Jason Bateman, Ryan Reynolds trailer where the yep. baby poops in his eye in the first few seconds and it gets a huge laugh every time I'm in the theater.
And the wife poops on the toilet.
Yeah, right. A lot
Gross.
Of pooing going on
Ew.
There. Hilarious. So... I even think some of those scenes that are super broad and over the top are funny. Like, taken
right.
on their own, I laughed at those.
Sure.
But I just wish the movie was less schizophrenic, and I wish there were times where I wanted the movie to go one way, and it would start to, but then there's a scene sort of late in the movie where Kristen Wiig finally has kind of a breakdown,
mm-hmm.
a very public breakdown.
Oh.
And it starts, and it's great, because
yeah,
it's
so real, and
right.
so honest, and it's, it, and it's
and
I
it's
think,
been building
what real
for
people
so long.
Feel, too,
right.
in
and
real
we,
life.
Even in the audience, we've been feeling that.
Yes.
It's been building for so long, and when it finally happens, we're like, oh, finally, this catharsis. But it very quickly turns into this broad slapstick thing
right.
that, again, the audience laughs really hard at.
But I truly believe... that with just like three minor changes, that scene could still work. Like if they just cut it differently and change the location of the thing that I'm not saying because I don't want to spoil it. But you know, if they, that moment that was earned and we feel sorry for Wiig's character and it really is earned, you know, and mm-hmm. I felt so sad for her in that moment. If they could have gone with that and just let that scene play out without the freak out, can
right.
I say that?
Sure, yeah.
I thought that would have been so true to life.
Right.
And then what they needed to accomplish to create conflict still could have been accomplished, but maybe in the next scene in a different scenario.
Right. There were moments, especially in the second half of the movie, I would say, that like, I don't know, it felt like either they had done some extensive editing or test responding to like test audiences.
Right.
Like it takes all these sort of shortcuts to get over the big dramatic beats that are the purpose of the movie. I mean, the movie does, you know, sets up conflict for an hour and 45 minutes. We want to see that conflict resolved, but the movie like almost doesn't have the patience to do that. So it just takes these
right.
giant shortcuts to resolve right. the stuff that we've been waiting to see. And in some of those scenes, they would always start in such a way where I would think, oh, good, this is going to be a good scene. Melissa McCarthy, who we need to talk about, and Kristen Wiig have a scene late in the movie that I wanted to be such a good scene. I wanted it to be...
Oh, yeah.
...like, smart and honest and interesting because
right.
it had the potential to be all of those things.
Right.
But it goes another way. It's
mm-hmm.
not a horrible scene, but it just comes up
right.
short, I
oh,
think,
I agree
of
completely.
Being what I want
know,
it to be.
I know exactly
Kristen
what you mean.
Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph have a similar scene late in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
When I want the movie to be what I thought it was capable of being,
mm-hmm.
It would always come up kind of short. Not horribly short. I mean, it doesn't like screw it up totally to
mm-hmm.
the point where I walk out thinking they blew it, but
right.
it comes up short. Because if it... I'm a big fan of Forgetting Sarah Marshall, as
okay.
are you.
I was just thinking about there's something about Mary in my head.
Okay. I mean, there's something about Mary goes super broad a lot of times, too.
It does. But it for some reason, it works in the movie where it doesn't feel uneven.
Right. Forgetting Sarah Marshall, for me, is the movie that does it right. That yeah. It does sort of these wacky broad things, right. But it always grounds it in stuff that you didn't expect to see. The character is a little bit smarter, mm-hmm. a little bit more thoughtful, a little bit more realistic, a little bit more well-rounded than you had anticipated, where right. even, like, Kristen Bell isn't just this horrible, vapid monster right. that you think she's going to be.
Right.
And that's the movie that I wanted this to be in those moments.
Right.
I wanted it to surprise me a little bit with some sort of insight or something from, you know, a Melissa McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
Who essentially gives a speech that we've heard a million times and that yeah. we were already aware of.
Well, okay, let me back up here.
All right.
We saw it with a group of people.
Good point.
That was really fun. It was a long time since I've been with a big group to the movies, and it was kind of fun. It was very fun. And everyone was great people. And I was sitting next to my very kind and creative and smart friend, and she said she really thought the movie was going to take place in Vegas. Like, after they went to Vegas,
right.
the whole movie was going to be there. And the whole movie is not there.
Right.
Which is fine. Like, it wasn't necessarily a disappointment, but it really, you kind of go in thinking it's going to be, and it was marketed as the female version of The Hangover. The right. girls go to Vegas and get in a bunch of
right.
crazy, wacky situations.
Right. Right.
Will they figure it all out in the end? Right. How will it all end up?
Right.
So you go in with that, and it's not quite that, which is fine. I would have liked to have seen more of them in Vegas, I think. And at the same time, I would have liked to see more of them in their actual
right.
lives, right. dealing with each other and planning this wedding. And yeah.
Well, the trailers have a bunch of lines of dialogue, and this is not uncommon, especially for Judd Apatow movies, again, because they have all these different cuts of the movie.
And a bunch of comedians. We'll get to that.
Right. He has said recently that Paul Feig said recently that Judd Apatow tests different versions of the same movie at the same time, sometimes in the same, like, multiplex.
Oh, really?
That two different test audiences are watching two different cuts of the same movie.
Wow. And so they study to see.
They record, like, the audience's reactions, right. and they play it back, and they see what gets a laugh and what. I mean, he
that is fascinating.
Tries to be
and
sort
also,
of scientific about it, which I admire, but right. also it's like, no, you can't just let. I mean, to some extent, comedy is a democracy. I get it. If yeah. they're laughing, it works. So whatever. But, like, it's weird that he's tries to have, like, make comedy such a science, but hasn't made filmmaking a science because he's such a sloppy filmmaker. And this movie does feel like a Judd Apatow movie because Paul Feig doesn't have much of a discernible style. He just, here's a giant establishing shot of Milwaukee and cut to the interior. I mean, sometimes it feels like a TV movie. So there's all this stuff in the trailers that doesn't end up in the movie. And
some of it's really good stuff.
Right. Right. And then you watch the movie and there's all these people that you recognize that you want to see more of, but they have no lines of dialogue. Nancy Walls is in the movie and Melanie Hutzel is in the movie and Tim Heidecker from Tim and Eric, awesome show, great job, which is not a show I love, but he's a really funny guy. And they don't have any lines of dialogue. And you know that somewhere there's deleted scenes in which they act. Otherwise, right. why are they cast in
right.
the movie?
Right.
And I'm a little frustrated with sort of the Judd Apatow school of filmmaking where it's like, now I see a movie and right away I just know I have to wait for the Blu-ray because, oh, now I'll get to see all the stuff that I wanted to see,
right.
you know? Like, I want the movie to right. be the finished thing. I don't want it to be the preview for the Blu-ray.
Right. Well, and I mean, would he argue that the movie is the finished thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he would. But I find it frustrating because, right. again, this movie has, like, this crazy deep group of funny people.
Mm-hmm.
Ellie Kemper is yeah. in it from The Office, and she's really funny in the movie.
Her scenes with Reno 9.
Right. Wendy McLennan.
Yes.
Covey, I don't know.
Their scenes together on the plane.
I would watch a whole movie about right. the two of them. I really was thinking that.
I know.
And they kind of disappear
so
then from
I
that
know.
Point on. They're not really... Aww. Figures in the movie, and right. that's a bummer. And again,
and every time Ellie Kemper was on screen, actually, she would surprise us with maybe something funny or cute, or just the right, like, oh, that's the right line of dialogue to
right.
come from her at this moment, and
right.
it adds, like, the perfect thing to the scene, but then right. again, they cut away from her and you don't see her again for a while. It's like, oh.
Right. And honestly, I think I said this to you after I saw it. The movie that this reminds me the most of, and I mean it as a compliment, is The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Mm-hmm.
In that it's sort of sloppy. It's overly long. It's every few minutes it like takes a pause for this very specific set piece where they said, okay, every 10 minutes we need this, you know, some standalone sequence comic set piece to happen. But that it also has all these different funny people who are interesting and capable of carrying their own movie. I mean, 40-Year-Old Virgin, I always felt like that group of guys who work at the store,
mm-hmm.
Seth Rogen and Romany Malco and Paul Rudd
yeah.
and Steve Carell. I thought each of them was capable of carrying their own movie. And so, and they were all funny in totally different ways.
Right.
And I loved that. And I feel like that in the scenes where the girls are all together in this movie, I feel the same thing.
Right.
That they're all interesting and capable of being in their own movie. And
yeah.
they're all funny in totally different ways. And I wanted more scenes of all of them interacting
right.
because really when you see the movie, there's not that many,
right.
I don't think,
right.
unless I'm remembering it wrong.
No, I agree. And I think, again, that's part of the trailer leads you to think that it's this group of women
right.
who are going to get into some sort of adventures together, and you expect more of them together. That's
right.
it, you know?
Right.
Now, the woman who played, well, basically, Damages, what's her name? Damages.
Rose Byrne.
Rose Byrne. She is not my favorite actress. And that's, I don't know why.
She's always just been kind of boring.
Yeah, right.
Like, and she's
like
always
really,
played a specific kind of
yeah,
part.
Yeah, always just kind of wide-eyed it's, and staring.
Right,
and
usually a dramatic role.
Me.
And like a
like you
human
think
being
the sound
with,
that's going to come out of her is like, me.
Right, just like
me.
A human being with no fire or soul.
Right, right,
you know?
Right, no
just,
fire. I like that, babe.
But she was good at, well, you have fire, babe.
Oh, thanks.
You got fire.
Oh.
You got soul in the hole. You got soul.
oh.
She was in Get Into the Greek, and that was the first time that I saw her, and I was like, oh, she
right.
is actually funny. She's
right.
capable of doing something that I didn't know she was capable
There's
of.
There's some fire there.
And
she was really good in this.
Yeah.
She was good. She was perfect at playing this part.
Yeah, really good.
And I thought even in it kind of makes you hate her, and then there's a scene where you go, oh, wait, should I hate her? Well, we can still hate her. But no, but she, I mean, I thought she redeemed herself a teeny tiny bit in the end, but I don't know if other people will.
I wanted there to
that.
Be.
I don't know.
Again, that was one of those instances
I think
where I
still
wanted.
Still hate her.
Yeah.
I mean, and rightfully so. There.
Right.
Oh, I want to say something so badly about
well,
the end.
Well, save it for when we talk about spoilers.
Okay, but really quick, let me just say this:
yeah.
if like one,
it's all a dream. Sorry.
If one line of dialogue.
Yeah.
One of her, one line of her dialogue.
Yes.
Had been different near the end. I thought maybe that could have shown more growth in her character.
Okay.
I think it ends up where she hasn't really changed that much, but
I almost say that's to the movie's credit.
Okay.
Because I think it's rare that
well,
we
doesn't
see...
Need to, she doesn't need to grow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's rare that we see a movie that isn't 100% willing to soften mm-hmm. an unlikable character.
Right. And in the end,
it's
everybody...
It's all just a misunderstanding.
Everybody wins.
Right,
like,
exactly.
Look, this one is nicer,
right,
and this
right.
one gets the guy, and this
that,
one
no, some
gets
people
the job
like this,
she wanted, and
they,
this one... Right.
Right. Some people are like this, and they stay like this.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did want... Again, it's one of those moments where I wanted the turn. If to that's not the best description, but I wanted to be surprised more. And maybe we should save that for spoilers. Let's just remember
okay.
to go back to Rose Byrne's turn.
Okay.
Should we talk about Kristen Wiig real quick?
Sure.
Because that's one area where I think it differs from the 40-Year-Old Virgin. Because the 40-Year-Old Virgin, we love Steve Carell.
Right.
And we're on his side. Really the whole movie.
Sure.
And Kristen Wiig is playing a different kind of a character. She's not, like,
she's not
sweet and good-hearted necessarily.
Oh.
She is playing Gilly, I thought. She's playing, like, a screw-up. And I think a believable
yeah.
screw-up.
Yeah, right. A screw-up
I've known a lot
is...
of people like that,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, and I think that it a lot of it is just life. Like, sometimes people get... a run of bad luck. And so I thought,
right.
I was trying to say, well, it's not all, she's not a total screw up. She hasn't made so many mistakes that have led to these certain things, but it's the way maybe she handled them
right, exactly.
that led to
right.
continued
right.
lack of happiness right. for her.
It's not her fault that her brake lights went out.
Sure.
But she hasn't replaced them for a year.
Right.
And that little character detail I thought was everything I needed to know about her character. I thought that was so telling and such a smart, fairly subtle piece of screenwriting.
And the way that that sort of comes back around in the film a couple of times was done well. It wasn't over the top. It wasn't corny.
Right.
It was, it connected her to another character in a way that was pretty smart and realistic.
Again, I wonder what an early draft of this script looked like, because I do think that, we said she co-wrote the screenplay, and I do think it's a pretty smart screenplay in a lot of ways. And not to, again, put it just in this context of like, for women, by women, but like, I think it says some things about women and the way that they relate to one another that I don't see in a lot of movies, that I didn't see in, you know, Baby Mama or even Mean Girls, which Tina Fey gets all kinds of credit for writing.
Right. Well, she did write it.
Yeah, but I mean, people give her, people
like, oh,
say
wow,
that's a great screenplay.
Incredible,
like,
yeah.
Maybe, maybe not. I think this movie had a lot of smart things to say about it, but I wonder how much of that gets undercut or taken out so that we can have a scene where everybody throws up and poos, you know? I don't know. But, like, the little details where very early in the movie she's in bed with a guy that she wants to continue to impress, and so she very quietly wakes up and sneaks into the bathroom and applies full makeup and then crawls back into bed so that...
pretends like she had been sleeping.
So that when he wakes up, she looks beautiful
and
because she's
thinks,
in full makeup.
You look great.
And I thought of you. Not because you do that.
I was
going to
say no. Babe, sorry.
But because whenever we're watching a movie or a TV show, you'll say, who sleeps in full makeup?
Right.
Or like they'll just wake up and you and she wakes up in full makeup.
Yeah, that happens all the time.
All the time.
I get it that on TV they're not going to have them look like
how
I look right now
look
as we're recording this podcast.
You look gorgeous.
Oh, thanks, babe. But like, you know, face wash, pajamas, that whole thing.
Right.
That they, but why do they have to go all out? Like full eyeshadow and lipstick. Like, no one's
sleeping
like that.
But I thought
that
was a nice detail.
Yes.
You know,
and I think the way she did it, she didn't like ham it up, make it obnoxious, like, look what I'm doing.
Like she does on Saturday Night Live.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking. But I during that scene, I thought, oh, I wonder how many women do this.
Right.
Because I don't know, I guess like for today's standard, I kind of got married young, I guess.
I guess.
I don't know.
Do you regret it? Is that where this podcast is going?
Look at this beard. How can I ever?
Thank you. Are you referring to yourself?
No, oh. I may not be wearing makeup, but I'm not hairy.
No, I mean, are you my beard? That's what I meant. I didn't mean you had a beard, you weirdo. My goodness.
Oh, my gosh.
I was making fun of me, not you.
Oh, there's nothing to make fun of with this beard. I love it.
Again, talking about me.
Now, what was my point when we were talking
Kristen
about beards? Yeah.
Not in a hammy way.
I thought to myself, how many women really do that? I bet they do. I bet some do because it's probably hard out there when you're with someone and you're in because from what I've heard, it's very common to be in a sexual relationship very early on in the dating, sometimes before you're officially dating.
Right.
And so you still want to keep everything sort of like really new and maybe mysterious, even though you're having sex, but mystery of like, I look great in the morning. Yeah. You
never
want to let that
let
down because you're still pursuing them or hoping that they're pursuing you for something.
I'm not actually a real
future.
Person.
Right. Right.
I'm just this thing that's perfect all the time. But maybe she did
that. That was a great little point about her.
Maybe
about
she did
character.
That in order to keep John Hamm. And you said you want to talk about John Hamm. So here's your chance.
I'm not being cute or funny or exaggerating.
Well, you are being all of those things, but go ahead.
No, I'm not. I'm not exaggerating when I say that I have a reaction to John Hamm. I feel something inside my heart. I love you.
You like giggled very loudly early on at the sight of him.
I did not mean to.
And our very, very good friend who was a few seats down who knew why you were giggling that way and possibly even responded the same way. I don't know for sure. But she laughed really hard at you having that almost like, I believe you had the vapors. I believe what that's called is the vapors.
The vapors.
And the only thing to solve it was one of those hand fans and a lemon Coke with chipped ice. So I fetched you a lemon Coke with chipped ice.
And it's very cool that the movie theater had that available.
It was, yeah.
I appreciated that. No, John Hamm is extremely good looking. But it's
all right,
No, I don't. And there's a lot of good-looking people, including you, my love.
Thank you.
And so it's not just that he's so good-looking; it's that he's funny. I mean, he pops up on, he hosts SNL and he's funny and he is funny in movies. And then you hear things about him in real life and he hangs out with stand-up comedians and it's he, of course, he's been with the same woman for a really long time. And then that always makes me love the guy too. Like, oh, look, they're making it work in Hollywood. And, so he's Don Draper. And if you don't know what that means, then I don't know. Get yourself to the movie store.
Yeah,
To the Netflix for the TV show. They don't have movie stores anymore.
No, not really.
I mentioned earlier that my dream job as a child was to work at Blockbuster. And I did for 6 years through my high school and college.
It's really been all downhill since.
And no, but I loved working at Blockbuster. Anyway, wait, what am I talking about? Netflix, Mad Men, Don Draper, love him. It doesn't matter if the character is, like, if he's an a-hole as a character, he looks such a way that I just want him to just touch my arm. I want, or maybe hug him, or maybe just see him up close and, like, put my hand on his arm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just, and his chest hair, oh gosh, and his face and his jaw, and oh, it just like stubble on him.
This is getting awkward.
No,
like really awkward.
He's, but I love you.
No, it's fine.
So, I know you're not. I know. I know many people will be like, oh my gosh, doesn't your husband get mad when you say that you like that actor? No, because it's really not real, but yes, it is John Hamm. So.
And they don't need to know that this is what drives me to
and
drink.
I love the
it's
way
none
his
of their business. It's none of their business.
Right. His hand on her face, but he's like an a-hole in this movie, though. And that's right. But it's so funny the way that it's John Hamm being a-hole. I don't know. But I thought they took a little too far, actually. I thought, let him be this jerk who exists in real life and don't push it with some of the comments he made and some it's like
again,
no
it's back
come
and forth between
on,
the
really?
Realistic douchebag
yes.
and the
there is a realistic douchebag who says hurtful things to a woman he's just sleeping with and there is a woman who continues to go back to him but in real life it doesn't go this far. I hope not. I please hope not. Or if it does it's like just one person. Just one person ever.
Do you think we know that person?
I hope not.
Me too. We'll talk real quick about Melissa McCarthy and then we'll get into spoilers.
Are you sure you don't want to keep talking about John Hamm?
No, because now I want to talk about the object of my lust, Melissa McCarthy.
Okay.
she's very funny in the movie.
Yeah.
And she's great. And we watched
She was great on
Gilmore Girls for years.
Oh my
and
gosh.
So
I still miss that show.
She will always be Sookie to us.
She is Sookie.
Sookie.
Sookie?
Is she Sookie?
No, I think it's Sookie. Sookie.
I can't remember
even now. I'm confused.
Now I feel like
with...
Sookie is True Blood
right.
and Sookie is...
No.
I might have
no,
that.
No, Sookie, no.
Anyway.
Shoot.
So we knew her from that. And she's very funny in the movie, but I absolutely think she's sort of going
to
be the breakout character.
Right.
In the same way that Zach Galifianakis was the breakout character of The Hangover.
Well, and
the
wasn't it written that way?
The problem with that is neither one is a human being.
Right. Right. I completely agree. I knew this was coming.
I she's funny, but again, it's one of those things where it's like, no, be funny and be a person.
Right.
And she can't be faulted. This is in the material. This is not her performance.
Right.
But they go so far and make her so sort of eccentric and out there that she doesn't resemble anything that feels like reality. And that was my problem with Zach Galifianakis in The Hangover. He was funny, but he was from another planet in a movie that takes place on this planet. And so I guess it bums me out sometimes when a lot of audience members don't seem to care that these two things don't correspond. It's like, well, I'm laughing, so who cares?
Right.
But consider why you're laughing and where that lands within the rest of the movie.
Right. But
and
this is where right now you saying that you just lost somebody out there who's saying,
for real?
I don't want to
like
think.
We lost
I don't want to.
And you went on and on about John Hamm.
We gained listeners
you might
during
be right.
that part.
I
people
think we
tuned
John
in
Hamm,
to the dial. Do there, is there a dial
There's
on
a
the
dial
interwebs? In the digiwaves?
Good callback on the digiwaves.
Thanks,
the digiwaves.
Babe. Callback. That's a term about stand-up comedy that you can read on the website.
That's this movie.blogspot.com. Do you want to weigh in on Melissa McCarthy? Or?
Well, I actually know someone in real life, a good friend of mine whom I love, who could remind me a little bit of that character.
Okay.
But again, in real life, she's not so over the top.
Right.
She's not so, you know, where Melissa McCarthy, like when she was being one way that you could believe, like let's say she's being kind of fearless and... like for the gross out humor. If you could go with that, but then they would cut to something where then she, you're like, is she mentally unstable? You know, like, right, is she, right. is something going off in her head right now, you know? So right. it, you could believe her is one thing, but then when you make it both, it's like, no, 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 no one has all of this, right? You know, and then they add something else. And then you get that scene where you think you're going to have the heartfelt sort of scene before. And I'm, I mean, it was heartfelt, I guess, but you want it to go further where it's sincere and real and
right.
And it stops again with like something goofy, something goofy that wouldn't be in the real life situation.
Right. That undercuts that scene. And
I will say there are cute puppies in this movie.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to snap some up for my cousin's wedding. And we're just going to have a ton of tuxedoed, adorable puppies.
They don't ever really show like another side of Melissa McCarthy where you understand like, oh, she's this way, but she's also this really great friend or this really loyal person or this really good listener. And it's hinted at later in the movie, but again, either those scenes were all cut out or they were never shot, and so it's just sort of glossed over.
I laughed when she, was it after they got married, and is that a spoiler?
There's a wedding in the movie.
There's a wedding. after they got married, and she kind of like rubs up against her brother.
Yeah.
And says, I love you, Dougie, or oh, Dougie, or something.
Sure.
That's standing out in my head as
something. Did that happen? I don't know.
Did it not happen?
It might have happened.
Maybe I dreamt it.
Did you see a different movie?
Yeah, I saw, it was called There Be Dragons. And in There Be Dragons, there was hilarious, but they were in Vegas. They and what happens dragons. To dragons in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Stays in Dragon Vegas. all right, so we're going to get into spoilers for a couple minutes now for Bridesmaids. If you haven't yet seen Bridesmaids, I feel like we're both saying see it. It's funny. There's tons to like in it, even though it's not a perfect movie.
Yeah, right. But definitely see it.
It's getting crazy glowing reviews.
Which and it was really fun to see.
Makes me happy. Yeah. But like at the same time, I feel like sometimes critics, when they really go overboard with the movie, they're talking about a movie that I didn't see.
Well, and I think, too, they're so happy that certain things went a certain way that now it's like, it was perfect. Well, no. Right. I can't.
Right.
I don't know. I think it's okay to say a movie has some problems, but it's still great and worth seeing.
But once again, on F This Movie, we're giving the qualified recommendation.
Always, see it. It's always.
Good, but, you know, until we do Back to the Future. And then it's just, no, you should see it. okay, so spoilers coming up for Bridesmaids in 3, 2, Bridesmaids. Go, spoil away.
Wait, I just want to remind the listener one more time. You're still listening.
The one person.
You out there.
John Hamm.
If you're, oh my gosh, John Hamm, if you listen to anything I said.
Please touch my arm.
I just want to touch his arm and his body.
Penis.
His face and kiss his lips. No, I'm just kidding. I want, you know what I really want to do? This is it. A last thing about John Hamm. I want to rub my cheek against his cheek for an extended period of time. And I don't face mean cheek? Butt cheek. Okay, I mean face cheek.
Just making sure. On either end?
I don't even care about his butt, really. No. I don't know. No, I've never seen
it.
I don't know what it looks like.
In the movie. We're in spoilers now. We can talk about
that. Okay, we're in spoilers. So if you're still listening, spoilers here.
Okay.
Real spoilers. I'm about to do one.
Yeah, no.
Give one away. Okay.
We gave lots of warnings. I'll even put a sound effect in.
Meep, beep.
I think it's going to sound something
spoilers.
Like that.
Spoilers. Spoilers.
I need to isolate what you're doing right now and spoilers. Add it to every
spoilers?
Podcast.
Spoilers.
All right, go.
Spoilers. There's a scene with Kristen Wiig at the, oh gosh, wait, no, let's back up. Bridal shower. How hilarious. So there's a scene where Kristen Wiig tells the other, Kristen Wiig is the maid of honor. She's the best friend since childhood of the bride.
Don't spoil so much. So,
right, wow. And there's another woman standing up who the bride has only known for about 8 months. It's
Helen. It's Rose Byrne.
It's Helen. Rose Byrne. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Right. and she is very fancy and loves to plan parties. She's extremely wealthy. And there's, I think this movie has a lot to say about wealth or social class and how money can kind of make people feel like they shouldn't be together or hanging out. That might be a whole other podcast.
No,
maybe
I think
I'm
you're
crazy.
Absolutely right. And don't forget what you're about to say. Right. But that was one of the things I liked about it, that it doesn't shy away from the fact that Maya Rudolph is definitely going that way.
Yes.
She's marrying into a rich family.
Yeah.
She's becoming a member of a country club.
And she's pretty
she's
comfortable
going off
that.
To have her asshole bleached. Right. She's not necessarily apologetic about it. And on the one hand, I wanted the movie to explore that more, because I think you're right. I think I think it was smart about what it was saying, and it's not something we see in movies very often.
Right.
Because ultimately, in most movies,
they're either of one or the other.
Right. Or she would have to realize at the end, well, money isn't everything, and I value my friendship more. Not that she's choosing one over the other.
Right,
but,
right.
But so I wanted more of that because it was one of the things that the movie did well. But then at the same time, I guess I'm glad that the movie didn't hammer us over the head with it.
Right.
I don't know.
Okay. So Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph grew up together, so they're both from Milwaukee, the same pretty, I mean, you get the impression that maybe Maya Rudolph's a little better off growing up in terms of, yeah, you don't know for sure, but maybe, I don't know, she had a cool dad. And where was Kristen Wiig's dad?
He had gotten divorced. They had gotten divorced 12 years earlier to that whore.
Oh, yeah, that whore. Jill Clayburgh played in her final Kristen Wiig's, yeah, mother, and that was nice to see her.
Do you think at the end of the movie when they have that hug, when Kristen Wiig is, again, we're in spoilers, finally trying to get her act together, and she goes up and just gives Jill Clayburgh a hug. I was thinking about, like, watching that at the premiere. Do you think Kristen Wiig just, like, breaks down into tears watching that? Because how sad that must
be. I know.
Way to bring it down,
I know, but you know what? It seemed like Jill Clayburgh was having a lot of fun playing the part, even though it's not a huge part. Right. So that made me happy to think of that. But,
yeah, definitely.
So what was I saying? Kristen Wiig. So it seems like, oh, she didn't have a dad. So the dad divorced and married that whore, which, by the way, usually when there's a divorce, he marries a whore.
Yeah, that's right.
But then he wasn't part of her life, or what?
I don't know.
See, divorce can wreak havoc even on adult children. That's another podcast. So Kristen Wiig seems to be sort of stuck in this in her life, and financially, she's not doing very well. We didn't even talk about the roommates. Maybe we'll mention that. But
they're in a different movie.
Yeah, yeah. And Maya Rudolph is marrying into this very wealthy family, and it seems like she's pretty comfortable with it. And she makes friends with Rose Byrne, who is her fiance's boss's wife. Rose Byrne is a part of the bridal party, even though they haven't known each other for more than 8 months, and quickly tries to kind of take over, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think that people do have strengths and weaknesses and need to, like, kind of give what they can and be honest when they can't give more, and I think that's fine. But, you know, when you're involved in a wedding, everybody wants to try to make it as great for the bride as they can, and I think then the pressure comes back on them. Like, we want to make it the best. We want to make her happy. We want to make sure she's getting everything she can, and then it's like, oh, wait. Who should do what? You know, are we doing the right things? So immediately there's this conflict between Kristen Wiig thinking that, oh, am I doing enough? Or is Rose Byrne sort of going to do everything better than me? And there's the scene that sort of was in the trailer where they're giving rival speeches.
Yes, and I did not like that scene.
No, that's at the engagement party. Right. And it kind of seems silly. And it's like, well, it's just an engagement party, so let whoever talk, whoever wants to talk. But the way that it went back and forth was very, away from reality. Like, that's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen that way.
Comedy doesn't always have to be realistic. Right. But because the things that I liked so much about the movie were based in reality, it disappointed me when it would stray so far.
Right, and I wanted to stay in that realistic world.
Anyway, you were saying.
Right, so there becomes something here with social class and money. And when Kristen Wiig says, hey, I have an idea, bridal party, for the shower, why don't we do something sort of French-themed, Paris-themed, because Maya Rudolph's character has always wanted to go to Paris ever since she was younger, and she hasn't been there. And everyone likes the idea except for Rose Byrne, who you get the impression that she doesn't like that idea just because she's not the one who came up with it.
Right.
She says, well, no, I think that's been done already, which sure, maybe, you know, there've been a lot of French themed things. I don't know. But she says that's been done already. Let's think of other ideas. So she quickly dismisses it and Kristen Wiig feels bad. And again, I think it makes it worse because Rose Byrne has only known the bride for 8 months. It's not like she's the bride's sister or something. Right. Where you go, oh, okay, well, let the sister have, you know, I don't know. But what was I saying?
You're giving a lot of plot summary.
I know.
Even though we're in the room, this is
so she suggests that, and then it kind of gets blown over, and then they talk about the bachelorette party, and then lots of scenes happen, and then it comes back to throwing the shower, and it turns out that now Rose Byrne is going to throw the shower, and the invitations come, and this is such a funny moment, I think.
Yeah.
Because it speaks to what's going on in our country with all these reality shows of, like, really expensive or really rich people throwing really expensive parties for anything, like spending $100,000 on a kid's baptism party or $100,000 on a kid's 10th birthday or $100,000 on a woman having a baby.
$100,000 seems to be the magic number.
Yeah. It's happiness. Let's let's try to get that.
All right.
What can we do?
I don't know.
Prostitution.
All right.
I feel like it all started with that MTV show, Sweet 16, where then, you know, really wealthy people are having these parties for their 16-year-old daughters. And then regular Americans who can't afford to do this think like they should. Like, this is a way that we really show we love our son or daughter or wife or whoever. Like, we have to throw this elaborate party. So this scene with the invitation kind of speaks to that, and it speaks to who Rose Byrne's character is. But the invitation comes, Kristen Wiig gets it in her little apartment, and it's a box, and it's pink with roses, and you open it up, and it's the invitation, the shower, Paris-themed. There's like many parts to it, possibly a candle in there. I don't remember. I was laughing so hard because a butterfly flies out of it.
There's a little tiny box inside the box that she opens, not knowing what's in it, and a butterfly flies out.
Oh my gosh.
And it is. That is one of the best jokes in the movie. I thought that was so funny.
And then she throws this shower that's so elaborate, and it's Kristen Wiig's idea. And at the shower is when Kristen Wiig gives a gift, and it's really thoughtful, and it's about like their childhood memories. And right after that, Rose Byrne gives the gift of tickets to Paris, and it's everyone's like wowed by this. And she says, "I know you always wanted to go," to Maya Rudolph's character, and that's the moment where Kristen Wiig's expression, her posture, the way she's standing, the how far away she is from them, it's like the perfect. She's not all the way in the back, but I don't know. It just was perfect, and you feel so sad for her in that moment, so sad. And then it gets ruined because that's when she has the freak out that we mentioned.
Get right. Right. She says, "Are you effing kidding me?"
Right.
And it's great. And we're like, yeah, that's exactly, we've been waiting for this moment and right. We're on your side. You've been screwed over too many times.
Right.
It's right that you have it out right here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the best idea, but sure. And then within about three lines of dialogue, she says, "What kind of woman gives another woman a trip to Paris? Lesbian." And it's like, okay, now you've lost us.
Right, that's
and
not...
And then it turns into her going outside.
And wrecking everything.
Putting her hands in food and throwing around
chocolate
a giant
fountain.
Cookie.
Yeah.
And,
wait, there is something really hilarious about that cookie, though.
What is that?
There's a giant cookie on display at the shower, which kind of relates to something Kristen Wiig had suggested. But, and Kristen Wiig, in her freak out, says... Oh, shoot, what is it? Do you really think the women at this shower, or do you really think this group is going to eat that cookie? Implying that the bridal...
Nobody eats.
Nobody eats anymore. Like, nobody eats. No one's going to eat a cookie because, oh gosh, my diet, my figure, my size zero. Nobody eats. And I laughed so hard at that.
Yeah. Not a huge laugh in the theater.
No. Oh, for me.
The laugh came when she then started splashing around in the chocolate fountain. And again, it's one of those examples where it's like you want the movie to go to this
in a real way.
Place.
Right.
And it's okay if we're not laughing at that moment.
Right.
Because we've spent all this time building to this moment. We need to have it out.
Right.
It's okay if it's not hilarious, you know? This can just be somebody really expressing their feelings. But, of course, that's not okay. So we get into the slapstick.
And my rewrite comedy would be that maybe she does say, "Are you fucking kidding me?" or something right there. But my rewrite would be that, sure, Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig can still have that fight. Mm-hmm. But they could have had it privately in the kitchen or another room somehow, you know?
I don't even mind that they had it in front of everyone. That's not
Well, the fact that it went so far, I guess. You're right. So it didn't need to go.
It was all the food destroying.
Right, right. So maybe they could have just had that fight and then end it there, and she still could have said, "I don't want you at the wedding." And you still would have the conflict that the story needs, that the movie needs.
Right, but, you know.
It didn't have to include all that throwing of chocolate.
Right. I agree.
Because what a waste.
But the movie does that a lot, you know, where, again, it takes these shortcuts. We get to the end of the movie, and... Again, the last act of the movie just rushes over all these beats.
Yeah, right.
We spend a ton of time
and the movie had earned them, so let's see them play out.
Right. We spend a ton of time on Kristen Wiig. Kristen Wiig and Chris O'Dowd have a kind of a falling out, and we'll talk about that because you would want us to talk about that.
Yeah.
They have kind of a falling out because that has to happen in every romantic comedy where they split up only to be reunited. And she tries a couple of different ways to get him back. And one of the ways is she genuinely needs help locating Maya Rudolph. And so she finds his squad car parked on the road, and she says, "Can you help us?" And he's ignoring her. Mm-hmm. And so we get into, again, it's funny.
Yeah.
But in the reality of the film, it makes no sense. Mm-hmm. It's like this 4-minute set piece where she tries all these different things to get his attention, where she's speeding and spinning around in her car, and she's drinking beer, and she's texting, and she's topless, and she's trying all these different things. And again, it's funny. It's one joke after another.
Yeah.
But it makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
It stops the movie at a point where we don't want to stop the movie. We want to get to the end. We're trying to get to the wedding, but now we have to sit through this 4-minute set piece.
And then
for what they're trying
to
accomplish,
right?
I mean, that what she was doing had to take a half hour,
right?
In real time,
yeah.
Right. And they're trying to find Maya Rudolph as soon as possible because it's her wedding day. So why are they spending a half hour doing all this crazy stuff? And again, it's just to get these laughs. And it's a comedy. I get it. Laughs are fine. But because I've said it so many times, but because the movie works in certain ways, I want it to do more of that. And but do you want to talk about the Chris O'Dowd? They sleep together. And they and wake up, and he's the total opposite of John Hamm.
Right. John Hamm he's never sweet. Wants her to he's stay happy over. That she slept over. Wants her out as quick
he
as possible.
He makes her cappuccino. Yeah. He says, come out here. I have a surprise for you. He's respectful of her.
Right.
He's the opposite of John Hamm.
And he's everything you want him to be in that scene. Right. And she had said she was a baker and had a bakery that went under in the bad economy. And he said, you really should bake again. You really should bake again. And he sets up this whole thing for her to bake. And I thought for a second, I was like, oh, really? She keeps saying she's not in the mood to bake, so like, don't force it on her. But I really thought that even if she was slightly annoyed by that, I really didn't think they were going to let it go where it went, which is that she's so mad she has to storm out and say, you don't know me. Well, actually he does, because you truly love baking.
Right.
And there's a whole scene where you are quietly by yourself baking in the movie to some song playing over that's indicating that you're at peace when you're baking, and you make this beautiful cupcake that I wanted to eat.
I didn't read that was at peace. And that's one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Because it just shows her doing something that I've never seen done in a movie.
Right.
This very elaborate flower cupcake that she makes.
So pretty and good.
And then she just makes the one.
Yeah.
She takes a bite of it. And the movie sort of has the courage to hold on this face that she gives for like too long of a time. You feel like it should cut, but it doesn't. It's just silence and her sort of staring off, this weird dead expression. And the audience that we were with didn't know how to read that scene.
Right.
And they're kind of giggling because they're like, is this supposed to be played for laughs? But I didn't think so. I thought this was played for sadness.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. I thought her performance in that scene was great. And I applaud that the movie, that they kept that scene in there.
Yeah.
Almost to the point where later when she bakes and we're supposed to be like, oh, she's on her way up again. She's
baking.
She's ready to bake again. Yeah. Those beats are unnecessary. We've already watched her do this.
Right, right.
And now we have to watch her do it again, only I guess it's now a different context.
But because we watched her do that, the way that we watched her do that,
right.
When he suggests that she bake, it's like, no, he does know you. This is what does make you happy. But still, she has to get mad and say, you don't know me, and she leaves, and then there's this conflict, and then we find out later that he's been calling her and she hasn't been returning calls. Like, why would you cut him out of your life like that? Why? Everything that you've gone through.
It doesn't make sense. And again, there's a subtext there that isn't spoken.
Do we need to have a conflict between them? Why couldn't she?
Right.
Why can't they just work out? Because the rest of the movie still
No, but again, I think there's truth to that, that she is a person who sabotages a lot of things.
Right.
And she even says in the very next scene, this guy, he was super nice to me. He was super cute.
She calls her friend.
So naturally, I ran out right away.
Yeah. I think there's something to be said, too, about like she calls a friend. She's leaving this message. She explains what happened, and she says, so if you could call me back so we can talk this out or talk through it.
Right.
And part of me says, well, that's great, because that's what friends are there for. You can talk to each other. And then part of me says, part of the problem is that she's still relying so much on sort of this, like, girl, like, when we're young and we have to talk out everything with our friends. But, like, really, the more independent you become, you have to learn to not necessarily talk through every beat of anything that happens to you.
And Maya Rudolph is getting married.
Yes, Maya Rudolph
has
created a
world.
Moved on like that.
For herself,
And not that she doesn't want to have a friend anymore. That's not what I'm saying. Like, it's important to have friends, and that's great, but.
And so the movie is, I think, saying a lot of these things that we're pointing out in a very subtle way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really smart, and I think it's really spot on. And so then it bothers me when they really have to, like, underscore more obvious emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's a subtext to the whole I don't want to bake anymore thing that she never comes out and says, you know, like I failed and I don't want to, I'm scared to try it again, basically.
Right.
She
yeah.
doesn't come out and say that. And he doesn't understand that. So to one extent, I applaud that, like, she doesn't have to yell that out at him and then run out.
Right.
But again, the movie then gets so obvious, like the Melissa McCarthy scene that we referenced earlier, where she comes over and just starts slapping Kristen Wiig, and you're your problem, and you're your problem. Well, we get that. You're telling us something that is very, very obvious.
Right.
I want you to tell me something that maybe I couldn't have completely figured out on my own.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know.
Maybe the audience, though, wouldn't have gotten that.
But then are they missing all these other things that we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean,
are they missing that scene?
I was seeing some Facebook status updates today with people
status
just saying...
Status I believe is plural.
Oh,
Stat-I. Facebook stat-I.
Okay. Well, I was seeing some of those today. And a lot of people saying, saw Bridesmaids today. It was hilarious. And I thought, well, that's fine.
It was funny.
But if people are leaving and only saying that, then my guess is they went in thinking it was going to be the girls go to Vegas and have the hangover. And even though it wasn't that, they still had enough laughs that's what they're taking away with. Oh, it was so funny.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was funny, but there was so much more to it. And I think there was so much potential for more.
Right. Who knows? Maybe a longer cut will come out on DVD or Blu-ray that restores some of the things that we're talking about.
Sure.
My guess is the longer cut will just restore more of the jokes. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, yeah. Not like here are these extra scenes of
interesting
dramatic
beats.
Conversation,
right? Exactly. It's going to be
conversations
just,
about friendship,
right?
Or relationships.
Here's the scene where they get bikini waxes. Sorry, we cut it out. Like, oh, thanks, guys.
The Brazilians.
Exactly. All right, we've gone on way too long about Bridesmaids.
I am sorry.
So everybody see Bridesmaids.
Yay, movies.
If you like comedies and women and weddings.
If you're just a human being who
cupcakes.
Likes movies in general, see this movie. Why
I think
wouldn't
so.
You?
I think there's enough to talk about.
Right.
We've certainly found stuff to talk about.
I'm so sorry if I spoiled things for people.
It's all right. Good luck in the two weddings that you're standing up. I hope they're kind of like this.
Well,
I won't be at either one.
You won't?
This seems like the right time
to tell
you.
That's really awkward. Yeah.
Okay.
Because one of them's for my cousin and the other one is your sister.
Oh, right.
So that's
I'll
really
let her
weird.
Know that
okay.
I can't go.
Okay. You're just busy those nights?
Yeah, I think so. One night I'm watching all of the Planet of the Apes movies.
Okay.
And then the other night, I think I'm just going to watch plain apes movies.
Okay.
Like,
that's not as legit.
Yeah.
No.
Well, like that movie where the monkey plays the catcher on the baseball team. Ed, right? I think it's called
Ed.
Yeah,
I think so.
Anyway, I can't go to my sister's wedding. I'm watching Ed. Thanks for being on the podcast, my love.
Thank you for having me. Hey, one day maybe we can have a podcast together about like Speed or Point Break.
Dude, like a dude movie?
Like a movie that I like.
Like Dick Flicks you're talking about?
DickFlicks.com.
I'm making it happen. Bye, everybody.
Bye.